Blog Talk Radio.
You want to replay the point? Okay.
Mr. Wawrinka wants to replay the point. 15-0.
Good afternoon and welcome to Replay the Point. Today is Sunday, June 11th, 2017 here in the United States and Monday, June 12th, 2017 in Paris, France, where co-host Karen Helf is currently residing after taking in today's men's French Open final. Good night, Karen, or good morning, good early morning, just after midnight in Paris.
Yeah, it's just running after midnight, so it's technically Monday. Thanks for the welcome, and I am tremendous day today, for sure.
Absolutely, and as we heard in the introduction, Mr. Wawrinka would like to replay the point. Actually, I think he'd like to replay the whole match today against Rafael Nadal. You were very fortunate to be in attendance, Karen, and Rafael Nadal obviously winning his 10th Roland Garros, 15th major overall, just superlatives are not enough for what this man has been able to accomplish in his career, and especially at Roland Garros. Initial thoughts on what you're able to see in the match today?
Well, you know, I think both guys came out, I think, with immense desire for different reasons, wanting this title. Rafa, a lot of desire, but also pressure, you know, a lot of buildup around this one. And I think we saw that at the end. I mean, I don't know if you caught him with his head in the towel for quite a while there right after they called the match with him as the winner. You know, for Stan, I think he had such a tough match against Andy, you know, the match prior. Took a lot more out of him, a lot more in the tank, a lot more mental gymnastics, if you will, to stay in that one and come up out on top of the world number one. So kind of coming in from different points of view. But, you know, I think the thing with Rafa right now is he's healthy. I think, dare I say, completely healthy, but probably as healthy as we've seen him in quite a while. I think he's learned maybe in some ways the hard way that, you know, he's going to have to respect his body going forward and really make sure that he gives himself the time to heal. But additionally, you know, starting with Monte Carlo, going through Barcelona, Madrid, and then, you know, Rome, yes, he exited out earlier than a title round, but, you know, still quite a strong performance. And we know with Rafa, it's all about preparation. And when he has the right preparation and good results, because he knows he has prepared well, then the confidence soars. And I think that's truly what you saw today. I was wondering if he was going to come out looking shaky, you know, with some nerves, and really didn't see much of any of that today. I just think he was riding on confidence, not as in, yes, I've got this, but yes, I've done everything possible I could do to prepare, and I'm as ready as I can be, and I'm going to go out and play the moment and see what happens.
Absolutely. No, a very good analysis there. And obviously Stan was right in there with a shot early on, 2-all. He did have a breakpoint opportunity. Who knows maybe how that first set might go a little bit differently if he got that break, then did very well, I think, to save 3 or 4 breakpoints in one service game that lasted an eternity. But then Rafa, in his next opportunity, broke Stan. Next two opportunities broke Stan, and all of a sudden we go from 2-all and Stan playing very well and fortunate save serve, hold his serve, rather, and then almost in a blink of the eye, we're at 6-2. 2 first set, and Rafa was rolling at that point. If you could elaborate a little bit, Kieran, at those moments where Stan did have a break point, and then that was a very intriguing game where he did hold serve save his break points a number of times. Take us through that juncture, if you will.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that one game in particular, but that was the one thing that I noticed with Stan is it was taking him longer to hold his service game. So that was kind of a clue earlier on, I think, for me that, you know, things were looking favorable for Rafa where, you know, Rafa's points were going more quickly. You know, I don't think you could say that Stan didn't play well today. I mean, you know, he still made some amazing shots. As you said, he fought off, you know, some break points and played some long games to hold his serve. We all know that, you know, facing break points is probably the most important aspect of tennis and being able to come out of that successfully, and he did. So, you know, I just don't know if, as we talked a little before the show, if maybe the result of the very first set that he had come in perhaps with an expectation that he was going to be more competitive, and it was almost like, you know, he came out playing at a higher level, but as the first set passed and then the second, it almost seemed like it was chipping away at his belief, because I don't think it was really, you know, a physical thing for him. I really think it was more of a mental challenge today. And once he sort of started to doubt himself, that's when you saw the game decline a bit. And then, you know, Rafa was so strong on the other side of the net.
Oh, absolutely. And obviously this is a huge win for Rafa, number 10. It's going to go unmatched, I think, forever. But the trophy ceremony, Kieran, if you can talk a little bit about that. Obviously, you were there. Your coverage, if you will, was much better than on TV. But anything that stood out in particular from that presentation?
Well, you know, obviously both guys, they have a tremendous amount of respect for each other, you know, and I think they both know the value of a win as well as the sting of losing a slam, but also knowing that, you know, there are opportunities and maybe they don't come all the time, but, you know, that it can be anyone's day as well. And I think, you know, both Stan and Rafa showed a lot of heart towards each other, which mm-hmm. I'm always so pleased to see, which was great. But then, you know, I just have to say, watching Tony Nadal walk out with that trophy was just,
mm-hmm.
yeah. I mean, I think the word that came out of my mouth was, this is awesome. I mean, it just,
mm-hmm.
you know, I don't know, maybe I should have accepted it, I don't know, but it was such a heartfelt surprise, I think, for a lot of people. And I mean, I looked around, a lot of people were teary-eyed and sobbing, especially because it's going to be his last season with Rafa. This is sort of their final, you know, big achievement, if you will. You know, obviously Roland Garros has been their greatest success of their partnership over the years. And so I think it was a really fitting tribute to have Tony bring the trophy out, but as well for him to stand side by side with Rafa on that podium.
Yeah, absolutely. No, thanks for that. Those observations. And Kieran, we're going to back up about 48 hours ago. You were very fortunate enough to attend both of the men's semifinals. Sort of a daunting task, if you will, given the fact that Roland Garros sold two separate tickets. I want to ask you about the logistics of that. Obviously, clearing the stadium out and filling it back in, and obviously Rafa racing against the clock, namely daylight, to get the job done against. But first, let's talk a little bit more about Friday. And you saw a marathon, if you will, between Stan Wawrinka and Andy Murray, in which obviously mm-hmm. Stan prevailed. But if you could take us through some of your memories of that match and what jumped out at you.
That was just such a high-quality match. I mean, both of them were going for their shots, serving well, really playing everything well. And, you know, I remember one point, a gentleman sitting next to me, I think it was in the fourth set, and it was just a point that was played extremely well, but Andy lost the point and kind of hung his head for a second. And the guy next to me was like, you know, he's just got to let that go because he did everything right. There was just nothing he could do. That last shot was just too good, you know. And that match really, in terms of the men's singles side, really stands out for me as probably the most competitive high-quality match. And I'm not saying Rafa's match wasn't great today, but, you know, when you're comparing and really looking at the matchup between the players, maybe the mentality where they both are at that point in the game, and being able to stick with each other toe-to-toe, that match was exceptional.
No, outstanding. No, it was a treat to be able to take in as well for at least four sets. Obviously, Andy probably ran out of gas. Stan was playing exceptionally well, feeling good about himself to level it at two sets apiece, and then Stan did get the job done. And Kieran, again, very strange scenario. I think it was the first time they sold separate tickets, and everybody's scratching their head. Well, okay, there is a possibility that the first match can go long as it did. Why don't they start everything a little bit earlier? But obviously, you had to exit and then re-enter. So a little bit of a unique scenario. What was that like?
Yeah, I mean, they just kind of very quickly came through, cleared the stadium, you know, got everybody back in. But I will say, and I was one of them, I had to go out and find another ticket. I bought through the resale site, and it was absolutely not clear on there that you were purchasing a ticket just for a single match. So there are a number of people that I think kind of felt sort of burned when they thought they had bought a match, bought a ticket for both matches. But, you know, is what it is. I do understand the business side of tennis, and certainly a revenue making opportunity to separate these two matches out with, you know, four players that are just playing exceptional tennis right now, and you know, great competitors. Especially, let's throw in Dominic Thiem here. We haven't really talked much about him, but, you know, had, you know, more of a exit that, you know, wasn't what he was hoping for, but we know that he's had a tremendous clay season as well, played a lot of tennis, you know, has come up against Rafa and beaten him on clay. So as we said before, that's another name that's going to stick around for a while, and would expect to see his name on that trophy at some point.
No, completely agree. Dominic Thiem, the only man who will go down as victorious against Rafael Nadal on clay in 2017. Quite an accomplishment for him to do that and, again, get to the semis. And absolutely, we expect very good things from him going forward in his career, especially on clay. Kieran, before we wrap things up on the men's side and go over to the WTA, anything else that you'd like to share or jumped out at you? Were you in Paris when David Goffin went down, unfortunately?
I was not, and boy, I just feel like that's just tragic for him, but let's hope he's able to heal up quickly. I know it's an ankle. I heard some folks say it's a break. Some folks say it's a sprain. I don't have confirmation yet, but just hate to see that regardless. I guess we do have to say, on a positive note, shifting gears, you know, for our American players on the double side, we ended up with both Donald Young and Ryan Harrison in the final, playing against each other, and Ryan Harrison coming out on top. But, you know, boy, talk about, I don't think anybody would have called that, right?
No.
You know, in terms of who we were looking to see in the final. So congratulations to both of them, really, on a great run for the week, and to Ryan and his partner, Santiago Gonzalez, and, you know, for their first victory. I think it's their first time playing together, too. Not mistaken.
Oh, it was Michael Venus of New Zealand with Harrison.
I'm sorry. Confusing Donald Young's partner. Yes, sorry.
Yep.
Michael Venus. I apologize for that. So
it was shocking to watch all the top men's pairings and doubles go down very early in the tournament. And, yeah, for Ryan Harrison, congratulations to both Ryan Harrison and Donald Young, Americans, for reaching the Roland Garros final. I completely agree. No one saw this one coming, and very nice result for Ryan Harrison and Michael Venus. And, Karen, switching gears to the WTA, Ostapenko with an absolute stunner, given the fact that she was down a set, love three break points against, flips the switch, starts swinging freely as she does all the time, but was connecting a little bit more. Simona Halep, I was a little surprised, got very dejected after not winning that game, but you know, she was up a break in the third set, still had an opportunity to win it, but wow, 20-year-old Yelena Ostapenko of Latvia, Roland Garros champion. I'm shocked, to put it mildly.
Yeah, and her first title, her first WTA mm-hmm. title, and it's a Grand Slam. So, yeah. I was in the main courtyard and watched one of her matches prior. It was the match against Bashinsky. And, you know, I have to say, when it started out, I thought for sure Bashinsky had the upper hand, mainly due to experience. But she just, everyone was saying, you know, little engine that could. She just keeps coming forward. She's very aggressive. And she seems to play without hesitation. It's like she's able to assess and rapidly, I don't want to say quickly, but rapidly decide what she's going for, and then she's done and she's executing. So, you know, and she's a powerful hitter and she's taking time away. I heard lots of comparisons, so many people, including myself, saying, you know what, she reminds me of Monica Seles, that
wow.
came up again and again and again. And even the kind of the young girl with the tennis racket that almost looks too big for her hands, you know, being out on the court. So quite a lot of that going on. And it was just exciting to see, you know, she's a firecracker out there and kind of a dream story, you know.
I completely agree. Big win for her over Simona Halep, who probably has to be kicking herself. This is her second Roland Garros final. Looked pretty good. You know, she got through Pliskova in the semifinal. She would have been world number one, as well as Roland Garros champion, had she won this match.
Mm-hmm.
And she's really got to be scratching her head on this one. She was doing all the right things. Again, up a set, three love. Three break points to go up a double break and most likely seal that match pretty quickly, but it all got away from her. I know she's invested heavily in working with Darren Cahill earlier in the clay season. She had unfortunate situation when she rolled her ankle playing against
mm-hmm.
Fidelina in Rome. That maybe detracted a little bit, but she, you know, she was sort of iffy early rounds of Roland Garros, was getting it together and advancing through the draw nicely, but you have to, again, with all the big names out of the draw here at Roland Garros 2017 on the WTA side, this, I don't know, I don't want to write her off, but this, in my opinion, probably was Simona Halep's best chance to get this job done here.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I mean, you have to look at your opportunities and kind of the odds and statistics of things, and, you know, not only with, okay, Serena's out this year, she'll probably be back next year, but also the other players coming up, you know, Ostapenko, as well as, you know, a number of others that are just becoming stronger and becoming bigger and bigger challenges and bigger threats every couple of months. You know, it just seems like that next wave of women that are going to be able to start dominating is beginning to tip into that area. And I don't think there's going to be much of a gap left. You know, and then we also talked a little bit about some of our other dark horses and favorites, you know, and I talked about Caroline Wozniacki, and, you know, she went reasonably deep into the quarterfinals and then sure enough came up against Ostapenko, and I think I don't want to say took her for granted, but I think certainly wasn't expecting what she came up against.
Right. That's well put. I agree. Wozniacki, obviously world number one for year ending twice. Great accomplishment. Won a lot of titles in there. Does not have a major tour name. People were thinking, okay, she's in the quarters against someone who this is a potentially winnable match. And as you mentioned, Karen, probably she thought the same thing. So got the first set done, but was only able to manage four games the rest of the way. And just want to talk about some other names because they were brought up as potential challengers to post, maybe even hoist the trophy. Kiki Mladenovic got to the quarters as well. Survived a couple of times earlier on in the tournament, and you had to think, okay, maybe Lady Luck is smiling on her the way she's progressing. But Tomea Baczynski had other ideas, took her out in straight sets. Obviously, it's always nice when a Frenchman or French woman is progressing through the draw, just the local excitement to be amped up a bit, and the roars of the crowd are extra loud. But Mladenovic not to be against Baczynski.
Yeah, and you know, I'll just tell a quick brief story on Baczynski because the first time I ever got to see her play up close, I was actually volunteering at the Miami tournament, and my job was literally court access. So I was standing in the corner of center court, so one of the entrances, and got to watch her match. And I want to say she was playing Halep, but I'd have to look that up. And I couldn't get over the power in her ball striking and how cleanly she was hitting the ball. And to see it up close like that, you know, just really gives you quite a perspective. So I wasn't shocked that she went up against Kiki and fought this hard. And not only that, really just saw her be quite a fighter. I think with her, she's had some consistency issues, but obviously, you know, she's got the ability to bring the game to the table. So it'll be interesting to see if she's able to work on, you know, producing with more consistency to achieve, you know, results like she did this week.
No, good, great call on that one. She is a pleasure to watch. I like her game as well. Someone else who's going to leave Roland Garros with quite a lot of regrets, Karen, Elena Svitolina, who had herself a very nice clay court season, again, took out Halep in Rome in the final there and had match point against Simona Halep in the quarters and then lost her way after up 5-1 in the second set. Karen, she only won one game the rest of the way, lost a tight second set breaker, but was bageled in the third set. And all of a sudden, Svitolina, that had ideas of winning this tournament, as others felt strongly about as well, ousted. And you have to wonder, you're so close, you have that match point. You still have a shot in the tiebreaker. Don't get the job done. You still have another shot in the third set and just got rolled by Simona Halep at that point in time. But I think this one's going to sting a little bit longer for Elena Svitolina. Unfortunately for her, she was right in there with a shot.
Yeah, I mean, she's also been one in the past what, year and a half that's been a rising star in the WTA, has been, you know, collecting some titles and, you know, showing a lot of promise. She's also a player that's pretty aggressive, plays with a lot of power, so she's exciting to watch. You know, but I think we go back to this time and time again. It's a lot of players can play great tennis on a given day, but coming through the draw, it's that consistency day in and day out. And then especially with the matches that I saw, you know, towards the end, even with Halep, you know, I think some of it was, again, starting to just not believe in herself. You know, I'm, you know, doing all these things up against this young girl, and she keeps coming back and attacking me. And,
yeah.
You know, what can I do? Can I do anything? I don't know. It just seemed like it when you look at, you know, the body language and things that we see on the court. And, you know, I'm really reminded, and I'll talk more about this in my own experience with the Nadal Academy, but, you know, the preparation, giving you the confidence, kind of like going in for a final exam, right? If you know you didn't study and you didn't review the notes, you're probably going to go into that classroom to take a test feeling more anxiety and feeling less comfortable. When you go in and you know what, I read everything, I reviewed everything, I studied as hard as I can, and I've prepared as best as I possibly can, then it removes some of that anxiety and it lets you go out, I think, and just play with a level of confidence, not an arrogance, so I got this, but hey, I'm prepared to do my best today because I've put in the work, you know, and then that is a foundation for believing in yourself. So to me, it's less the physicality with these top players because they've all got it, right? I mean, we all see them make amazing shots from time to time and, you know, serving well and returning well. But it's that maintaining that level of belief, especially when you're being pushed, that says, I'm down, but the scorecard isn't printed yet, so it's not over.
Yeah, I like that assessment. And, you know, we talked about Simona Halep would have been world number one had she won on Saturday. Karen Pliskova also had an opportunity. It just seems that no matter what Angie Kerber does, including crashing out in a first round in a major, she's still the world number one come tomorrow. But how about Pliskova? I mean, this is, again, this is not her best surface. She's got to feel good about making the semis. Sure, she was a set of piece. In the semifinal against Halep, didn't get the job done. But we talked about players with regret not having opportunities, not cashing in on Roland Garros. I'm going to go the opposite way with Carolina Pliskova, the fact that she made a semifinal and was in with a shot on a surface where she's really not done well in the past. And I think this is going to be good for her, a springboard, if you will. Got a lot of matches in. She's going to feel good about going back there next year. But that and Petra Martic of Croatia, who was, you know, I've seen her play before. She came through qualifying, had a nice run to the fourth round as well. But I think Pliskova eventually will get to number one, I think, anyway, in the not-too-distant future.
I agree. You know, I think with Carolina, if there's one word that comes to mind when I think of her and her game, it's steady. She may not be, you know, a dramatic, dynamic shot maker necessarily. I mean, she returns extremely well, don't misunderstand what I'm saying, but, you know, those ooh-ah kind of shots, maybe you don't see that from her as much, and she doesn't show a ton of emotion out there on the court. She's just kind of very even keel. But as you said, this is not her best surface. She's played a lot of tennis this year. She's had a lot of success this year. And a semifinal in a Grand Slam is nothing to be ashamed of. And in her case, I think, you know, very proud of. I think one area where you definitely see an opportunity with her is when she's trying to come into net, especially on clay, she just kind of looks lost, standing up at the net and trying to defend. But she'll get it. She's a smart person, and I think is definitely one of those that will put in the work and take a look at her game and, you know, see what she did well here and see where the opportunities are to improve.
Sure. No, I like that. That's well put. And obviously, we're wrapped up with the clay court season, Karen. We're off to the grass already. Some qualifying going on in England and points elsewhere. And any other final thoughts on Roland Garros before we talk just a little bit about a little bit more of your time at the Rafael Nadal Academy?
Just quickly. We didn't mention Bethany Maddox-Sands and Lisa Safarova, who took the title in the doubles at Roland Garros, so definitely want to put a plug in for them, and had an opportunity to see them play also against Schiavone and Flipkins, and that was really one of my favorite matches. It was very, very dynamic. Schiavone's so intense, and boy, if you haven't seen Bethany Maddox-Sands playing at the net, you ought to, because she's like a lightning rod out there. And then, you know, I'd also say they're just the enjoyment that team has with each other. Obviously, they're great friends. They enjoy playing together. They have great chemistry out there on the court. They're always smiling. They're always laughing. And yet, you know, also playing with intensity. And so great job on their part, and really happy to see them having success at a Grand Slam.
No, absolutely. And they're having a ton of success. It's always nice to see smiles on the face of players on tennis courts instead of the agonizing grimaces and whatnot. But you nailed it. I mean, they are a fun pair to watch on the court. And, boy, their scoreboard is speaking pretty loudly. Yet another major for Bethy Maddox-Sands and Lucy Shahafova. Yep. So, Karen, you also spent 5 days at the Rafael Nadal Academy in Mallorca, where you touched a little bit about this last show. We're going to obviously elaborate more on future shows. But when we talked, you think you were early on in your visit there. Any other snippets or tidbits that you'd like to share? And you already sprinkled a few of them on with respect to the preparation, as you mentioned, for going into a match. And you know, if you know you've put in the work and you feel good about taking the court with no regrets at all, your chances are you're going to swing freely. You're going to feel better about your chances rather than the potential doubts in your head. But any other snippets, if you will, that you'd like to share that you picked up and learned?
Well, you know, I just want to stress it's really a place where anyone can come. I'm writing more about this, but, you know, I looked at my visit with excitement and trepidation. You know, my tennis playing CV goes, I was on the tennis team for one season, didn't do very well, quit and took up gymnastics the next year. Probably didn't really touch a tennis racket, maybe casual weekends once or twice a year for 20 years. So I was kind of going, I don't belong here. I don't know. They're going to look at me and go, why is she here? You know, going out to play and take a lesson. And I've got to tell you, it was not the case at all. It was like, as if they took working with me as seriously as if they were working with anybody. It was amazing, because I really did. I kind of went on the court. I shanked the first two balls into the next court, cringing. The instructor on the other court jokingly said, hey, you need two courts. And I was going, oh, God. And then he followed up with, no worries, I have insurance. And so we all laughed. Got that out of the way. And then the instructor I had, Thomas, he just really, I will tell you where he started, though. Most people, I've taken a couple lessons, not a lot, but almost everyone has gone straight to my swing, the arm motion. Mm-hmm. He started with my feet, because I was taking giant steps instead of small steps to get to the ball. And so I couldn't possibly make a good shot on the ball because I wasn't in a good position to do it. Mm-hmm. And just focusing on taking smaller steps and actually getting my body closer to the ball, that was the other thing I didn't realize. I learned back in the day of Chris Everett wooden rackets and the huge backswing, if I learned at all. I mean, it was me and my dad hitting balls in the street. quite a bit of change, and, you know, I just have to say they made my experience there extremely enjoyable, fun, but I learned a ton, and not just about tennis. I've learned things about myself that in the past week I've been reflecting on as I've been walking around and running around, and I'll share more of that maybe later for a next story.
No, that sounds great. And what you said a few things there that I really liked. Everybody's welcome. You don't necessarily have to be an athlete per se. And again, the people that have worked with you in the past with lessons, they all focused on the same thing. And yet here's Thomas concentrating and leading off with something completely different, namely your feet. You must be thinking, wow, okay, I'm dialed in already. Somebody is noticing something that that I need to work on that could probably lead to me being more effective elsewhere in my game. But that's nice, Karen. Not only did you pick up things on the court, but as you mentioned, I'm very intrigued to learn more about some of the other aspects that you've been mulling over and thinking about in Paris. That's outstanding. That's what it's all about, in my opinion, for an academy like that. Just not the athlete side of it, but the human element side. And that's going to be thrilling to hear more about that.
Yeah, and to be honest with you, I'm a little bit blown away of the awareness I have about myself right now concerning certain things. So I'll share more of that with you later. Yeah.
Absolutely. And before we wrap up, Karen, any other thoughts you'd like to share on Roland Garros 2017?
Well, you know, I do want to say this, you know, given everything that's been going on in the world, especially in Europe, in London in particular, the security that the French community put together, the police obviously coordinating with the tournament, was just exceptional. I know some people might have seen it as a bother that there were four or five checkpoints and your bags were searched, you were patted down, you were wanded, but you know what? Boy, it made me feel completely comfortable walking around that they had things very well planned, organized, orchestrated. So I'd say hats off to them for that, because it's just an important thing right now, and you know, unfortunately, something that we have to be aware of.
Well, I agree. Well, we had the flares in the stands, and then obviously someone jumping on the court and trying to put a hat on Federer over the years too. So they've had their incidents, and it's good to know, as you mentioned, at this point in time in the world that they took every precaution to be safety conscious this time at Roland Garros. So very good, Karen. Look forward to another show with you, perhaps when you are in London or points elsewhere. And glad you had an opportunity to take in both finals, the men's semifinals, as well as other action during the week. And so on behalf of Karen Helf, this is Pete Zebron saying good night. We'll catch you next time on Replay the Point. Good night.